everybody. We now have a very special thing on the show. For the first time ever, we have an exclusive interview. We were actually embargoed to talk about this for about a day, which made me really nervous. On the show, right now we have Bradley Kroon, from the Software Freedom Law Center, which we had on before. As he points out, I think he's the third time guest. And also we have Aaron Williamson, also from the Software Freedom Law Center. And they're going to talk to us about something big that actually happened today.
Something huge.
Huge.
So welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good to be here. I think that may be the first time I've heard someone else pronounce your last name correctly, Bradley.
Well, Fab's German and my name's German,
right.
That sort of works out well. As Fab knows, there's supposed to be an umlaut over the U, is an adjective in German for
audacious.
That
would be Kühn.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
It was dropped
exactly.
100 years ago or so. So the big news is that today the Software Freedom Law Center filed a lawsuit on behalf of the Software Freedom Conservancy and Eric Anderson regarding 14 companies that are currently violating the GPL. And we filed a copyright infringement lawsuit in the Southern District of New York.
So if you followed our other GPL violation lawsuits, this one is very similar in many ways. The biggest difference is that there are 14 defendants in the complaint rather than the one defendant per complaint that we've done in the past.
And the other thing to add is there's a 50% chance that if you have a flat screen TV, it's named as a lawsuit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I when I read these papers, I was kind of surprised at the big names that grew up, you know, companies like Best Buy, Samsung, JVC. So really, 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 really big companies. And as usual, it's about Busybox, right?
Yes, as usual, Busybox is the infringed work named in the complaints.
I mean, we talked about this before on the show. Some guys have the impression that you guys just, you know, are really lawsuit happy and really like to sue everybody under the sun.
Trigger happy, I think the term is.
Yeah, but as we talked to Bradley, usually this is like the last resort. I mean, can you go into a bit into the process and why you are suing these companies now?
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that a little bit. You're right that it's the last resort. I certainly would not call myself lawsuit happy. It's a pretty irritating process, to tell you the truth, and I'd be much happier if everybody would just come into compliance immediately when we sent them the first letter. But unfortunately, that doesn't always happen. The way that we usually do this is that we'll get a report of a violation. Many of them come from users of consumer electronics products that are just out there and trying to hack the devices that they buy. A lot of them also come from our very own Bradley Kroon, who's been on something of a tear recently. Then we'll independently confirm the violation, make sure that we know that Busybox is in there and that there's no source being offered or that the source offered is inadequate. And at that time, we'll get in contact with the company responsible for the violation and say, look, we noticed that you're using Busybox, you're not in compliance with the GPL, we'd like to bring you into compliance as quickly as possible, and, you know, here's what you need to do in order to satisfy us and you know, make this go away. And, you know, a lot of companies will get right back to us and say something like, you know, we didn't realize we were violating, we got this from our vendor, we want to do whatever it takes to come into compliance, and those are settled usually relatively quickly and without the need for any sort of legal action. Unfortunately, too many companies just don't respond to us in any, you know, sort of reasonable amount of time, or after initial communications, they'll just sort of drop out of contact. And it's then that we feel the need to file a lawsuit when we're not getting a response from the company and we find that they're not taking us seriously.
Yeah, so I've got a quick question from the IRC channel. We've got a bit of a chat going at the moment. Someone was just asking me, does this affect the Linux kernel as well? Because presumably, I know in the as far as I can see in the legal papers, it only mentions BusyBox. But is that running on top of a Linux kernel? So would there be a potential potentially another violation there?
Oh, there almost certainly is a Linux kernel in. I can't speak immediately that everyone involved has Linux in it, but most of the firmwares we find where BusyBox is present, obviously BusyBox is designed to work with the kernel Linux to make a embedded operating system in most of these cases. Mm. So Linux is usually present. The reason we file only on BusyBox is primarily because we represent, SFLC now speaking, represents a copyright holder of BusyBox, namely Eric Anderson, who did a lot of the work in the late 90s and early 2000s on BusyBox and really got it from just being that little tiny thing that was in Debian to being something that has almost a full POSIX implementation in it. So the other part of the picture is that BusyBox is a member project of the Software Freedom Conservancy, which I serve as a president of, as well as having a job at SFLC. I serve as the volunteer president of the Software Freedom Conservancy. And Eric Anderson has named the Conservancy as his agent to do enforcement, which is why you find in the complaint in court, we mentioned the Software Freedom Conservancy and Eric Anderson both. But one of the requirements we always place for restoration of rights, and by that I mean under Section 4 of GPLv2, when you violate the license, you lose all your permission under copyright law to copy, modify, and distribute the software because the license terminates when you violate. So as a condition of restoring the right to do all those things with BusyBox, we generally require that the party come into compliance on all GPL software and LGPL software that we know about in the system. So we require compliance on Linux as a condition of restoring BusyBox. We can't actually enforce on Linux because we don't represent or are the agent for any Linux developers. Right. But other than Eric himself, who has a few copyrights in Linux, but not very many. Generally speaking, we just require compliance across the board, which is good for the community because it means that one enforcement gets it all done. And it's also good for the violator as well because they don't want to have each copyright holder coming to them day after day asking for compliance. Once we get it into compliance on everything and check that everything's in compliance, they're usually hopefully an upstanding member of the free software community.
Yeah, I found it quite, I read these legal papers and you were, the filing basically, and they were talking all the time about Mr. Anderson, and I had kind of a flashback to the Matrix at that point.
Yeah, Eric does not prefer Neo. I've tried that.
Okay.
The funny thing is I read this and I had Hugo Weaving's voice in my head reading this to me. That was really weird. is there a reason that this time you are basically filing one suit against all these companies instead of, as you said, what you usually do is like, you file one suit towards one company?
Part of it is simply that we have this many defendants who, meet our criteria for a lawsuit at one time. I mean, and this should certainly serve as an indication that we've prioritized enforcement and that there's a decent amount of enforcement work going on at SFLC at the moment. So that's certainly part of the reason. But legally, there's really no difference between filing a single complaint against multiple defendants and filing several complaints against individual defendants. And since the facts of these cases are all so similar and the violations across these companies are so similar, it made sense to us to include them all in a single complaint.
Yeah, speaking as someone who finds one GPL violation per day on average, the facts are often very, very similar. You get the firmware, you open it up, it looks exactly the same from the point of view of having a file system in it and a kernel and so forth. And they're distributing online, they don't have an offer for source code. The facts, as Aaron said, are often extremely similar in different cases, so it's easier. We think it's better for the court's time as well, that if we can handle lots of these matters in one lawsuit, we don't want to waste the court's time.
Mm. That makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Yeah, that does make sense. Someone in the IRC, again, AJB, is asking another good question. He was asking about how often do you see, after these cases and things, how often do these companies become useful members of the community and start contributing? Does that ever happen, or is it more like you have to twist their arm? Have there been cases where somebody has become a good contributor after this? Maybe they just didn't realize what was going on, or didn't realize their obligations?
Yeah, I think that there certainly has been places where enforcement generated a community process, which I think is the most important thing. The thing that got me started being really serious about GPL enforcement goes back to the WRTG enforcement in circa 2002. The fact that we have OpenWRT and DDWRT, those things exist primarily because of that enforcement effort to bring the source code to be released. Now, there are violators who join the community after having an enforcement, there are violators who don't. But the important thing is to get the source code in a good state that a community can pick it up if they want to. And I think there have been companies that have come into compliance in the past and have become at least ongoing complying members of the community. I often said during the GPLv3 process that I thought it was a bit unfair to single out TiVo because while I don't like their practice at all of locking down the TiVo version 2, and I think that it's good that GPLv3 addresses that issue, the fact is TiVo was a GPL violator that came into compliance early and basically very quickly after being informed that they were out of compliance. And as far as I know, they've been in compliance ever since. Now, they choose to fork at V2 because they don't want to be subject to V3, which I don't agree with them about that. But generally speaking, they've given their changes back, and they've been involved in a reasonable way in getting their source code out there. So I think it does happen. I think a smart company will realize that it's beneficial for them to be connected to the upstream if they can be.
Yeah, it makes sense. I was saying to Fab yesterday, it seems, I know this is something that you kind of believe as well, but the fact that these companies are getting so much from the software for free, as in beer sense, that it doesn't seem that much to ask them to give one little thing back, which is the changes that they make to it and make them available to others. It's, you know, it doesn't seem like a hell of a lot to ask of a company to me, but I don't know. I have a very biased position, obviously.
Well, I agree about that. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why companies end up violating the GPL, and unfortunately, one of the most common we find is that they're not educated by the vendor that they actually contract to for the software. So, you know, they'll find the lowest bidder, and somebody will put together a Linux and BusyBox based software distribution for them, a firmware to put on their device, and they'll, you know, minimally customize it and ship it to customers and keep costs as low as possible. The vendor won't tell them about their GPL violations. They may have nobody in-house with software engineering experience, let alone legal experience.
Yeah.
The issue gets overlooked, and in some cases, probably not as many as actually report this to us, but in some cases, the company had just no idea what the GPL was by the time we talked to them. Mm. On the other hand, I think that sometimes people protest that too much.
Yeah, but what I mean is it's not always malicious. So, I mean, it could be just a genuine mistake in some cases.
Yeah, exactly, and that's understandable, isn't it? I mean, the disappointing thing is when you write them, then obviously, like, you write them a legal letter and they just, you know, what do? They just don't answer, or, you know, they stall you. I mean, that's the disappointing thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and we'll find that some companies will get angry at us for bringing up this issue. And I think that the anger is better directed toward their vendor or themselves for not doing their due diligence and in understanding what it was that they were distributing to their customers. But we are definitely the targets of a decent amount of misplaced righteous anger.
And to be fair to those who do work with us, the majority of GPL enforcement that we're doing is not represented in today's lawsuit filing. I currently have about 30 matters of my own open with various different violators who are cooperating and talking with me and bringing themselves into compliance slowly but surely. It takes time and it's an education effort, but most of the violators I'm generally talking to are completely friendly. After an initial, as Aaron points out, anger, they eventually are friendly and they work with us to come into compliance. It's only ones that simply stop answering our email or refuse to talk with us or never even answer our original letter that end up in the state that you see in the lawsuit filing today.
Yeah, that's definitely important to realize that this lawsuit, even as many defendants as are named, represents, you know, a relatively small portion of the enforcement being done.
Yeah, and one can only hope that, like, this being a high-profile case as it is with all those big names, you know, that it gets out there in the press and that people... I really hope that people don't, you know, shy away from adopting Linux, but that they realize that, you know, if they do, they get a lot of benefits, but there is certain things they have to do. And, you know, that companies just realize that.
Mm. Yeah, so one thing I was curious about is what kind of, what kind of outcome are we looking for here from the plaintiff's point of view? I mean, what are you guys hoping for? Is that all these companies will suddenly come along and say, oh, we're sorry, we made a mistake, and we'll give you the source code or whatever, you know, come into compliance? What's the kind of the goal here?
Do you want the I want a pony, what I hope for, or what I actually expect to happen?
Yeah,
which one do you want? All right, I'll give you
both.
My dream in doing GPL enforcement, it's been my dream since I started doing it almost 10 years ago now, is to get a company that's violating the GPL to ultimately become a participant in the upstream projects. I think that there's so many interesting electronics products coming out on basically a quarterly basis now that use Busybox/Linux systems with minor tweaks and a few drivers here and there and a few improvements here and there and then some, unfortunately, often proprietary application on top, but in the user space. But generally speaking, these are interesting devices that I think the community wants to build free firmwares for, and it's just going to make that hardware that much more valuable to have a free firmware, just like happened with the wireless router space 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah,
we got this vibrant community. People still buy the WRTG because it runs OpenWRT the best. And that's the reason that product is still on the market, is because the free firmware runs best on that. And my dream would be to get each of these companies to actually participate with upstream. I'd love to see the people writing the drivers for these various different TVs and so forth on the Linux kernel mailing list. I would love to see them giving... I don't think that they're actually on the BusyBox side improvements to BusyBox that they need, but there are probably bugs in BusyBox that they've discovered they could be filing and at least giving the feedback to the BusyBox community where to focus their efforts on what they need. For example, I notice in a lot of these firmwares, not speaking specifically about the case, but generally when I'm finding violating firmwares in the general case, a lot of times they use the GNU wget program instead of the BusyBox implementation of wget, and I found a bug in the bug tracker recently in BusyBox that said that wget in BusyBox doesn't have certain features that the GNU one does. Well, that means they're carrying this extra weight of an extra binary along, when if the BusyBox developers knew, hey, everybody who makes a firmware would really like a few features in wget so they don't have to carry an extra binary and can use the multi-call binary to get the job done, well, I think the developers would want to focus on that if they knew it was that important of an issue. I'm guessing it's an important issue by what I'm finding in violating firmwares, but I don't even know that for sure either. But if they were talking with the upstream, they would really be in a good spot to get the software improved. Now, that's a dream that has not happened yet for most violations. So my realistic expectation and hope is that these companies will work with us to come into compliance, be responsive to us. They'll use this lawsuit as an opportunity to get a wake-up call and start negotiating with us to come into compliance with the license and get the source code fully out there. There was one other point I wanted to add about something said earlier about source code, getting the modifications. It's not just about getting the modifications. It's also about letting the users and purchasers of the product know that it's based on free software. One of the things that happens in the GPL space is because you get an offer for source, you become aware that it's got BusyBox/Linux inside the product. A lot of people probably have these TVs, have these various other products, and don't realize that it's got free software in it. And we want both the hacker community, the software developer community, to know that it's in there so they can make improvements, and also young people who are getting interested in electronics and software to know that they can get the source code of the thing sitting on their entertainment shelf.
Yeah, that would make a big difference. So, but what about timescales, though? Because I mean, I know the legal process tends to be a bit slow sometimes. So, I mean, what kind of timescale? You've filed this case, so what happens next?
That's a good question. I mean, now the sort of ball is in the court of the individual defendants to, you know, get in touch with us and open that conversation that sort of shut down at some point in the past, reopen it and figure out, you know, what they can do to come into compliance and resolve the matter, hopefully without further resort to the legal process. You're right that if the lawsuit proceeds to briefs and motions and, you know, then an actual trial, then it will take months, if not years, fortunately, we haven't had to get that far in any case in the past. And, you know, it's always our hope that amicable settlement will end any given violation matter, and that violators will just realize their mistake, come into compliance quickly, and that we can come up with terms that are you know, that help both parties move forward.
Mm. As far as I'm aware, all the other suits you did, all the other cases, the other parties always settled, didn't they?
Yeah, they've always settled in the past, and you know that part of the reason for that is that we try not to get to this stage in the enforcement process without understanding very clearly the nature of the violation, and you know having the facts on our side. And so the real purpose here is to get the attention of companies who aren't paying attention, and say, look, we're serious about this, and you really need to do something about this to make it go away. You have to respect the rights of your users, and we're here to make sure that you do that.
That makes sense. There's another question from the IRC channel. Sound Chaser, who's in there at the moment, is asking about the Best Buy televisions. I think they're called what they're called Insignia products. Whatever. I don't know if they are televisions actually. The Best Buy products. And he's saying that that are part of this case. He's saying they're made by third party OEMs. And is it not likely that Best Buy will just drop those OEMs? And what happens in that case? Are they still legally liable? Or you know, how does that affect?
Well, it's unclear at the moment. I don't know the particular relationship between or the full extent of the particular relationship between Best Buy and their distributors, and that's something that you know we'll have to flesh out in conversations with Best Buy when they get in touch with us. But it's a common situation where a U.S. company is merely sort of repackaging an OEM's basic product. In this case, it's a DVD player, the Insignia DVD player. But you know, we find many small U.S. companies who basically have an exclusivity agreement with some, you know, Chinese or Taiwanese distributor or manufacturer who puts together the hardware and puts together the embedded Linux and BusyBox distribution.
Mm.
It depends on the relationship between those companies. I mean, it could be that the distributor or the manufacturer did nothing wrong, that they were actually in compliance when they distributed to the U.S. reseller. We don't always know, and sometimes we don't get those facts. Regardless, both of them have obligations under the GPL, and it's not enough to say, you know, this person screwed up. It's not my fault that I distributed something out of compliance. You know, but it may be that they got that in compliance and they weren't paying attention to their own distribution.
Yeah, and the thing I'd add to that is that the upstream problem, as we call it, which is basically this concept that the people who sell you the product, put their name on it and make it available to you and sell it to you, rarely know, unfortunately, what's actually in the product with regard to the software and firmware. And some of these upstreams are anywhere in the world. There are many of them in Taiwan and China, as Aaron mentioned. There are many in Japan. There are some in the U.S. There are some in Canada. They're pretty much everywhere, or anywhere you can put together a group of software engineers to put together a firmware. And of course, the ones who win are the ones who bid the lowest as far as getting their win in the sense of getting their firmware into the device. And the way that they've been able to bid so low is because not only are they leveraging the benefit of free software, which of course we want them to do, they're also ignoring the requirements of the free software licenses, which we don't want them to do. So the company, unfortunately, that complies, right? So the company who says, I can build you a firmware, but there are these obligations under GPL, you have to do this, you have to make this offer for source code, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's somebody else who doesn't say that. They both might be BusyBox/Linux products, but who do you think they're going to buy when one's cheaper and doesn't require an offer for source? And they don't know that they're actually roughly the same product. They just think, oh, well, this other guy was telling me I have to make an offer for source, and he was charging me more so I could follow the compliance guidelines of this GPL thing. These other people didn't say anything about that, and they're cheaper, I'll go with them. Well, in the end, they're going to get the violating product because it's a race to the bottom. And that's something we're trying to fix. I sometimes see myself as a GPL enforcer as the defender of the company that's in compliance, because that company is being unfairly undercut by the people who aren't in compliance. And I want those companies in compliance to succeed, not fail, because they have these non-compliant competitors.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, Fab, you got anything else to ask before we wrap it up?
No, I think it's pretty clear. I'm pretty much done. I just wish you guys luck.
Yeah, thank you.
And I hope we could help with getting the word out and help me out a bit there, and help to explain what you do, especially because of all those people who say that you just are being, malicious and just want to sue people. I hope this helps to understand what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Yeah, we always appreciate the opportunity to clarify what we're doing. I mean, the fact is that some people just are never going to like litigation, and we don't love it. We do think that it's the only way to get things done sometimes.
Ah, come on, you're a lawyer.
Yeah, I mean, from my point of view, the GPL is a living document. It's something that actually is doing something in the world. And you can talk theoretically about all sorts of things with regard to the idea of, I guess how you say it, this theoretical idea of, oh, everybody cooperates in the community and shares their software. And that's great when it works and without any sort of legal requirement, but sometimes people don't participate in that community, and the GPL is there to make sure that everyone obeys the same rules, even if they don't want to participate. Their choice is, okay, fine, don't use the GPL software at all, or if you want to use it, you have to obey these requirements. So for the copyleft to have meaning, I think it has to be enforced, and that's really fundamental to the freedom of free software overall, and that's where I see my role in doing this GPL enforcement.
Yeah, that makes sense. One quick thing I wanted to ask is, seeing as we've got Aaron here and he's the lawyer, I think he should say this podcast does not constitute legal advice, just because that's what Karen always said.
He must have known you were going to ask that, because he had to run out to somebody was at my door. And he ran out to answer it. So in fact, he is not here to say that, but I can say that everything we've said is not legal advice. And if you need a lawyer, you should get your own lawyer. And obviously, if a free software project needs help, and if you're a copyright holder yourself and you want help doing enforcement, you can write to help@softwarefreedom.org to ask for help doing enforcement. We do enforcement for other projects as well besides BusyBox. They aren't publicly known, so I can't say their names right now, but we do enforcement beyond BusyBox as well.
That's good. We are all not lawyers, and the only lawyer we had on the call just ran away.
That sounds about right. We outlaws, we chased him away. maybe that's what it is. Yeah, so, thanks very much for joining us again, Bradley. Third time as well. That's pretty good. Good going there. And pass our thanks to Aaron as well, if he comes back. If he hasn't, deserted the place. Pass our thanks to Aaron as well.
Yep, and last thing I wanted to mention, of course, if you want more details on this stuff, I am sure it'll be on the Software Freedom Law Show at softwarefreedom.org.
Yes, thank
check
you
it out. I'm saying this so Dan doesn't have to, because, conflict of interest and everything.
as me as one of the co-hosts as well. But thank you for that plug, and we hope people enjoy both podcasts, Linux Outlaws and Software.
Yeah, they complement each other well. We don't know anything about legal stuff, and but we have beer and we make dirty jokes, which you guys don't do. So
I try not to.
Yeah, great. So take care. We'll speak to you soon. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, guys.